Good morning.
Hey, what's up?
Oh my god, this music, man.
It's 5:40.
It sure is.
It's amazing.
Oh my goodness.
Well, hello.
I'm Aaron Oster.
I'm Gabe Besaw. We're your hosts this morning here on whatever this thing becomes.
Racks and Stacks.
Racks and Stacks. Dudes talking around a coffee table,
yeah.
Dining room table, listening to cool music, drinking coffee that's better than what I
made the first time,
whatever that little dark water was.
we'll just call that rusty water.
Yeah, rusty water.
Rusty water.
That's how I take my coffee. My dog's trying to kill himself over here.
Oh my goodness.
Good boy. Hermagerd. Okay. Right, so man. We are listening to Lonely World by the Royal Tones. Right now, that's our theme song, whatever it is. Just cool music. You don't hear enough clarinets in music nowadays.
Certainly not.
At least not cool anyways.
Unless your life is thick with klezmer. In which case, yeah, you're in. you hate this. you are just like up to your ears in clarinet. And
love it. Mm. Anyways. So welcome to our ramblings and listening to Gabe go round and round with stories, and you're not sure where these things are going.
You really do have a good voice for this, man. No joke. Oh my god.
Oh, there we go.
So right before we started doing this, you were saying that we've been talking about this for a year, which is crazy.
A year. And I was giddy the first time. I was like, yeah, oh,
we should do this.
This would be amazing.
So a year ago, it's the end of February. A year ago was winter. Did we talk about this last summer? Like the summer of 19 when we were doing Racks and Stacks outside of AOK?
Yes. Yes, we did.
Oh my god.
So maybe it's been a little longer.
Yeah.
I want to give it less time just because the whole premises of this podcast, this talk is we started talking about music and food. Aaron is a chef, barbecue master.
Yeah.
All-around good guy.
But the master part, but yeah. Yeah.
He's the friendliest person you'll ever see at the face of his establishment.
Yeah, well, I employ a lot of 20-year-olds who have less experience in the hospitality arts, shall we say.
Well, you put the hospitality.
What?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
You do.
T-shirts we're getting made right now, guys.
That's going to be our coffee cups for the on our sale. Check our web store for our Haas in the hospitality.
That's great. Yeah, it's great. Well, I have been affectionately nicknamed Meat Daddy by my people, and I do appreciate that for sure. I always wanted a nickname as a kid, so now I've got it. For better or worse. Let's just hope I don't go to prison. Meat Daddy's not going to work out well for me.
It does strike fear in people.
It might.
Here comes Meat Daddy.
That might be good or bad. Yeah, I mean, we started talking about this because when you and Matt Wagner, DJ, shout out DJ Tall Ass Matt.
Tall Ass Matt.
We're doing Racks and Stacks outside of AOK. The connection between music and food seemed to be the same from the same origins, which was like celebration, gathering around, sharing like, passions and like interests together with people and getting people around the same table excited about something that just feels good. And putting together a good meal, putting together good music seemed to be like something that the two of us, our respective teams, meaning like you and Matt and me and Alex and the rest of the guys, just seem like a natural fit.
Oh yes.
You know, and it's ultimately what we keep talking about is why we do what we do, why the things are that we are excited about it. And I, you know, somebody, I was talking to someone about this yesterday. What day is it? Today's Saturday. So two nights ago, I had a friend over for dinner and we were just shooting the shit and we were saying, she's a musician, and I said, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a musician. And she said, yeah, you know, like, my parents were really supportive, and I thought, man, I guess when you're young and you have a dream of something, to do it, and someone says to you, that's a bad idea, and then you do it anyway, then that's like, that shows your, like, that passion is, like, deep within you to do it. And I realized I hated calling myself a chef, just because it seems like there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of strange connotations with the idea of being a chef today. It just seems like it goes hand in hand with, like, the word celebrity, which I really hate. But yeah, my dad and I didn't talk for three years because it was like, why are you cooking? Why are you wasting your time with cooking? It's like, that's because it's what I love to do. And so she felt the same way about music at a certain extent, is that like, when you decide that, when the world tells you that this is a bad idea for you, you shouldn't do it. And you're like, no, fuck it, I'm doing it anyway. Are we going to swear on this thing, I guess?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, all right. We're
doing, I'm going to try very hard not to.
Okay, well then I'll try hard not to also. So we can edit out that. We can beep that one.
My construction mouth sometimes gets in trouble.
Yeah, I think Pirate Kitchen mouth is a real disorder. So with you, man, like when did music become a big part of your life? And did anyone ever tell you, like, don't do this, this is a waste of your time?
So I grew up in a church family, and we were a very musical church family. My mother's is an ex-hippie. And she has a wonderful guitar and a wonderful voice and a real passion for music. And so music was there. I had three sisters, and we would travel around singing at different church events and things like that. So
you're kidding.
People, if you're listening, I'm a person of faith. So you can stop right now if you really want to. Anyways, we're not all weird.
I mean, hold total on a sidebar. Hold on. Let's not excuse your weirdness.
Total sidebar. Yeah, I'm just a weird dude.
Yeah, you definitely are a weird dude.
Anyways, I don't know. Music was sort of something that was very integral to my mom's like life, and she passed that on to me and all of my sisters. I have a sister who's a music teacher, and cool. Of a sister who sang at Carnegie Hall when she was in high school, and that was pretty cool.
And where does your family live? Like, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in upstate New York. Now, we're going to say northern New York, because there's a difference between upstate, Poughkeepsie, Albany, northern New York, which is, I might as well be Canadian.
Rochester, kind of?
North of Rochester. So I was about an hour south of Kingston, Ontario. So,
oh, man.
I can really go into the Canadian vernacular just fine.
Hence the hockey, too.
Hence right? The hockey. Yeah. Hockey,
the hockey, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, so yeah, I was grew up, raised in a small rural town in way northern New York. It's the frozen tundra.
Yeah, and music was a big part. It was always a big part.
Music was a big part, and so.
And it was encouraged too.
Right? Oh yes,
yeah,
yes. So when I was in fifth grade, that was when I realized that I might have had a different sense of musical loving than other people around me. We had a, it's a funny story. We had a holiday party, and I was like, yes, we get to bring records. I'm an avid record collector, so at that moment, that love was being instilled in me, just the love of the black vinyl disc that spins around and is cool. So I brought Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I thought it was the most amazing record ever.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yes, I get to play this in front of everyone. And it came time for my selection, so I put it on, and I play it, and I'm laughing hysterically, and I'm looking around, and nobody else in the party is like, this is just not cool. We want to put Def Leppard back on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so...
I was about to ask you, what was the context of this party? Like, what was the other music that was being played?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I was crushed.
Put that Whitesnake back on.
Yes, I was so crushed that nobody got the jokes. And the musical talent that Peter, Paul, and Mary had brought to my life.
Oh, my God.
That was the first inkling that I might have just a little different bend to my my musical taste.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, that's so funny, because, like, the music that you seem to somehow find. Like when we started doing this Racks and Stacks thing, man, I think that I was most impressed with the fact that you opened up the whole series with like this barbecue song.
Yes. Wendy Renee Barbecue.
I mean, it's crazy, man. Like the stuff that you find on disc that completely represents a moment, like this, what we were listening to this morning, man, it's just coming in. I'm impressed with your curiosity for encyclopedic music knowledge. I mean, it's the thing about food that I don't find myself curious about anymore. And you seem to have like this insatiable thirst to find new music. And it's impressive. It's really impressive.
I'm incredibly lucky to live in a place where there's so many great record stores, and there's a ton of people who are way more aware and willing to impart music to my life.
Yeah.
There's several dealers that are around that are like, you have to check this out.
Yeah.
And I've learned to just go, okay, whatever he says, yeah, I'm probably going to pick it up and be like, oh, that is the most amazing thing I've ever heard.
And you got this network of really like interesting people too, like to Matt as well too, is another insane music file, like record of file kind of guy who's just like obsessed with strange versions or strange recordings. And who's that guy from Montreal who you guys did that live?
So there's a podcast called Addicted to the Needle with Ben Shulman and Patrick Swazi, I'm sorry, totally butchered his name.
I don't think he's listening.
Not yet. He might, though, at some point.
Cool.
That's a podcast that really has turned me on in the last 2 years to opening up to a whole lot more French music, French versions of 60s tunes, mod rockers, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's just so many people that have cool interests that it's so cool to add those things to your kind of repertoire and what you're listening to, what you're searching for, and then to take those songs and play those for somebody. And, you know, when you play a record out, that's a song that somebody knows.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's in French.
Oh my God.
What is this?
It's amazing, man.
The light on people's eyes when they just like the light bulb goes off and they're like, wait a minute.
Totally. I mean, I remember when I first started listening to, I had a buddy back in the city in New York who turned me on to the whole Trojan label in general. And when they would play country Western songs or, you know, like Nancy Sinatra songs or like, you know, big hits from the US charts that would, somebody would come over, grab sheet music, go back to Jamaica and start recording it. You know, I don't think permission was part of the equation.
No,
it was just like making hits for the radio in Kingstown. And it's pretty incredible. When you hear it as well too. And it's like, there's a personal touch to it. I want to go back to your upbringing. So, you know, you grew up in this religious home. Were you encouraged? Like, what role did religion play in the music that you listened to growing up? And was it like, was there gospel music? Was there church music? Or, you know, you had said earlier that your mom had was sort of an ex-hippie. So I imagine you might have had an eclectic collection of records that you were playing in the house.
Yes, records, 8 tracks.
Oh, man.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Your John Denver 8-track.
Shag carpet.
The 8-track is a terrible, terrible music format. I'm sorry, anybody who likes 8-track, but that was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Just not user-friendly.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, so I think my mother, being the influence that she was, she definitely was more folky, more story-driven music. And I still love songs that can tell a story.
Like Dylan? Or
Oh, yeah. You know, I look back now, and one of my favorite tunes is Johnny Cash's Don't Take Your Guns to Town.
Oh, my God.
Like, that so tells good. Such a cool story.
Yeah.
And it wraps it up in a way that you're like, at the end, oh, yeah, I shouldn't take my guns to town.
Yeah. I love, there's when Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash did their Storytellers on VH1, and it was just the two of them, and he sings that version. For me, is like, that's the one that my dad, when that came out in 90s, I think, man, I just, that version of that song. But I love that song so much, man. That's so funny that Johnny Cash song is like, that you called that out.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Mm. And I love guys, that women musicians who can tell a story and really kind of evoke those things in your imagination that you're looking back and you're like, "Oh, I can picture that."
Totally. He drank his first strong liquor then to calm his shaken hand. He told himself at last he had become a man. I mean, that's I remember my first drink in a bar, and it's like, yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have guns in my hips, but, yeah. You know. Oh, man. Oh,
it's such but a there good. Was fire in my soul.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's for sure. I think when I started in my career, there was a lot of, like, that same attitude, which is like, I need to prove myself, you know? And it's a strange industry, man. You know, New York City, growing up in kitchens in New York, the jobs are so precious, and getting into a kitchen, yeah, you could get in any, you know, you could get a job more or less where you wanted, so to speak, but like the pressure to perform was so high that you needed to be on your game 100% of the time. And so it wasn't really until recently, when we moved out west, that we saw a lot more drugs in the kitchen. Drugs were done after work, for the most part. You know, drinking was done after work. You showed up hungover, but like, you showed up, like, you didn't call out. You call out, that's your job. It's gone. I don't know how we got on that tangent, but yeah, I mean, it's like, it's interesting for me to hear this, because your music taste is pretty eclectic now, I would say. But it certainly focuses a lot on, like, that Northern Soul. And, like, do you find that those records still are in rotation, that you grew up with, the Peter Paul and Marys, the Johnny Cashes? You still playing that stuff on the regular?
It depends on my mood.
Yeah.
I will go through phases where I'm definitely into a certain genre more than others. And it depends, too, what I'm doing. If I'm driving in the car, I have a lot more freedom as to what I can listen to.
Yeah.
If I'm at home putting on a record, sometimes you never know what I'm going to pull out.
Yeah. And Amber's like, please don't play that record.
She's not really into hardcore. So anything with screaming and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But early mornings. So weekends are a special time for me, because that's typically when I'm around.
Mm.
And so very early Saturday mornings, very early Sunday mornings, I'll pull out whatever, jazz records. There's just something special about that early time, like it is right now.
Yeah.
That you just put something on, you sit there with a coffee, and you're just enjoying the moment.
Dude, what you started, I mean, this music that you started, tell me more about this record, like, that you put on this morning. It's magic.
The Royal Tones.
The Royal Tones.
Lonely World. They're a band. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're a band and they make music. I honestly don't know a lot about them. They do instrumental.
What's it from? What year?
64.
Oh, man.
Yeah, 1964. They're on Mala Records.
Out of where?
New York City, I think. But they're a cool band. There's weird stuff that you can find if you're willing to listen and sort of go, oh yeah, that's different. This is one of those tunes that I'm always like, oh, that would make a great break.
Yeah, well,
some cool stuff in there.
You crushed it.
Looping, whatever.
So let's talk. Let's like talk a little bit about what we brought this podcast up for. Like, what was the thing that we were talking about? I mean, we started this conversation however many months ago, a year and a half ago, whatever, talking about the fact that we liked gathering people together around the things that we're passionate about, right? You with music and me with food.
Yes.
So, I don't know, man, like, what do you, how do you put together, I mean, what is it about it that makes you feel good? Like, we're talking about why music is exciting for you as a conduit to express yourself. I mean, certainly with your experience in life, like growing up in this
small town,
which
is weird.
Yeah. And having, like, I mean, having music from all over the world, you know, in your life now, and then sharing that with strangers. It's pretty cool, man. I want to like geek out, but
yeah,
I'm still impressed by it.
And so I think the catalyst for this, we were talking about sort of our life and our experiences and things like that, and I think we both noticed and were able to recognize that food will bring people together. And that's a catalyst of all of this. It was sort of like we were looking around and going, what the hell's going on with the world? Nobody wants to talk to each other. Everybody's like, yeah, you're this, that, and we're not going to talk to you because you're that.
Yeah.
And food and music are two things that really will bring people together, that it's strange how powerful those two things are.
Totally. I think they totally supersede all the general rules of society in that, first of all, food's a basic human need,
mm-hmm.
right? And music is a basic human trait. Like, it's a characteristic of our species that we have the mind that is developed enough to make music. And that's our ancient tribal component, that like we make music to express ourselves, to identify ourselves, and food is the same expression. You know, I got upset. This all started like 2018, probably the end of 2018, 2019, things really started getting like politically hairy. My mom and I and my sister and I don't share the same political beliefs. I grew up in a pretty conservative Jewish home, but also politically conservative, right? And I my first election, I voted for Bush. Like, I voted because I wasn't involved. I was 18. I didn't care, and I just wanted to vote, and I didn't think about getting involved in, oh, this is, I was just like, oh, this is my family votes for, this is who I vote for, which I'm sure is a common trait.
Mm-hmm.
But as I think about it now, I thought, man, you know, like, people don't walk up to the window at my restaurant and say, hi, I voted for so-and-so, I'd like to have a brisket sandwich, or, you know, like, it's not part of the conversation. And I think that was fundamentally, like, the big attraction to me was like, oh, this is not about who you voted for. Yeah, sure, when COVID started, we had a couple of crews of bikers come through. There were no masks, but, you know, it was like, they're going to take their mask off to eat, was my philosophy. And I know this may seem unpopular, but fundamentally, like, they needed to be fed also. And we got them. I came over to them with my mask on. I took all their orders. They sat down. I brought them food. They ate. They drank beer. Actually, they didn't drink beer. I was impressed with that as well, too. Like, these bikers were like, nah, we're good. I was like, okay, cool. New bikers. This is new world bikers. But, like, I just realized that food is beyond politics. And in my dream, I wanted to see, like, the head of the Ku Klux Klan from X town in X state sitting next to the head of the ACLU from the same town in the same state, and they both have the same food memories. They both, and they close their eyes, they're like sensory depraved except for their mouths, and they're eating food and they're talking to this person next to them. And it's, they, for a moment, they can share a moment. They can share a common thread, and then we're not so far apart, you know, and it seems a little bit sort of idealistic, but I feel like you have to be a little idealistic. I feel like that's kind of part of life, is like, yeah, like, I wake up in the morning, I don't want to be in a miserable mood. I try and find ways to be happy, even when things are really, really challenging, you know? And I think food does that. I think music does that too, as well. I don't think anybody cares who you are. I think you play that barbecue song out in the summertime on a Sunday at 4 o'clock and people are like, yes. I mean, we had a pretty good following.
Oh, man. For anybody who is listening, because we don't have any listeners yet, but just backstory, the Racks and Stacks was Sunday afternoons for the whole month of August, 2 summers ago, pre-COVID. It was one of the best times I've had, just playing music in a cool space with great people around, like Aaron and Alex and everyone from AOK Barbecue, Berkshire Barbecue, North Adams, Massachusetts. Please stop in and check out his amazing food.
Dude, it was amazing.
It was pretty magical.
Yeah, we even got the neighbors to complain, which was for me like top of the list of like, we are like dissidents of this community. I mean, it was kind of crazy, like 6 o'clock on a fucking Sunday, people are complaining that the music is too loud.
Yes, because they're working on a Sunday evening.
It's like, man, you know, take 2 hours out of your life, would you?
Yeah.
Listen to some music, eat some food.
Get some food.
Meet some people.
Grab a brew, yeah, and just chill out. Take some time.
Yeah.
That was the sidebar. Plug for AOK Berkshire Barbecue.
It made me realize that like maybe this podcast is part of continuing that same conversation, which is like, what is it, the music that makes us feel good, man? Like continuing that Racks and Stacks vibe is like, let's keep that going. Maybe that is what the name of this podcast is, for sure.
That's cool. I'm yeah, definitely down with it. Yeah, we can recycle it for Racks and Stacks again this summer, hopefully.
Oh, God. I really hope so, man.
Yes.
I really hope so.
So, yeah, commonality is one of those things in our such a charged world. People have been so quick to turn other people off, yeah, cut them out. You're not this level. You're not this person. You know, we have opposing views. I'm pretty sure Aaron and I would both say if we really started talking politically, we probably are very diametrically opposed. Sure, and you know what? I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too, man. I don't care.
Yeah, it's the free thinking, the idea that I can disagree with you and still see you as valuable, still see you as somebody that's worth hanging out with, listening to, hearing your opinions, and not being like, shut up. I don't care. My stuff is way more important than yours. No. This podcast is all about.
I think that's great, man.
And commonality.
Yeah, and also that when I'm talking to you, and let's say that the conversation goes political for whatever reason, right? First of all, that doesn't intimidate me, and second of all, like, I'm not gonna, me talking to you about politics, it's not me saying, hey, you know, Gabe, I really think you should change your mind on this thing. I mean, if you were like, I really think that, you know, we should see what we can do to get rid of the rest of the Jews that are alive on this planet, I might be like, you know, man, I think you should kind of like lighten your opinion on that one. You know, like, that may be a little harsh, you know, and people try to do that and it doesn't really work out and it's usually bad. So
yes.
But also I think that like, I'm not trying to change who you are. I can't, I couldn't if I tried. And you know, a lot of the, I've been sort of diving down this Eastern philosophical path for the last few years. I started meditating and I didn't, like I said, I grew up in a conservative Jewish home, but it was kind of full of a lot of, like, what's the word? There were some conundrums, right? Like I grew up in a conservatively observant home and yet my father took me to a lot of clam bakes and we ate a lot of lobster rolls as kids, you know, like the idea of kosher wasn't really part of it until much later in my father's life when he was more connected with the Orthodox community as he got older. And it kind of threw me off a little bit. And then I've been reading this great book. I finished this great book called, by Jack Kornfield, after the ecstasy, the laundry, because I went to this meditation retreat and it's a silent retreat and it was something that was really powerful for me. I'm sure that if you're, like when you're when you find that connection with in your church or with your congregation, the people who you share your faith with. For me, at least, I didn't realize that the terminology of God is what was a pressure point for me. It was like, I don't speak Hebrew. I didn't grow up in a home where we spoke Hebrew. And so I'm reciting words that are translated from Hebrew into English that had no meaning for me. I just needed to connect with something. And then like reading this book and listening to and reading works by famous rabbis about their what faith and what religion is, it's this connection that to something bigger than yourself. And also that like having gratitude on a regular basis and being humbled by the fact that like this is a massive universe. We are very small, and it's pretty incredible that we're sitting here with like all of these like atoms floating around, and they have been constructed in a way to make a home with all this equipment. It's pretty fascinating. And I think that like the retreat was silent retreat. So I didn't talk, no verbal or nonverbal communication for 10 days or 11 days. People talk to you, but you can only speak at certain times of the day and only if you ask permission. And, you're really in your own head. There were a couple moments there where I was like, I need to get the hell out of here. Like I need to leave immediately because it's so easy to be distracted. I mean, not to put music on the back foot here, but like I listen to a lot of music to help me to suit like as a soothing component, you know, a lot of the like Paul Simon, Peter Allen, even Jimmy Buffett, man, like those are the music of my youth with my dad. And when I'm in a bad mood or something like that, I'll put that stuff on and make me smile. But I'm also not sitting in that pain or that like agony, which I imagine is what Sunday is like a point of reflection. You know, you can really like sit with that for you. And that's what my meditation practice is. It's like I get to sit with that. But as I sort of move through it, I realize that like we're all saying the same thing. We are all exactly saying the same thing. So if someone is like, you know, evangelical, hopefully, you know, charity and humility are a huge part of their life. As it should be, is what they're trying to preach, you know, like, and then it's the same thing that, you know, you read teachings in the Buddha, you read teachings in Jesus, you read the Gospels, like it's pretty close. I mean, I don't want to say that they're all the same, but they are the philosophy of humility and generosity and charity and being good to other people is pretty constant. And yeah. I feel like food is in that vein for me. And so I get to, are you okay on time? Yeah. I get to do that with food. And so it's like, there is a spiritual component to it, to what I get to do with food, especially when people enjoy themselves, you know? And I don't know. Do you feel that way? Do you feel that way with music? Do you get to connect in that sort of like spiritual? I don't mean spiritual necessarily religious, but I mean like how deep is the feeling when you're spinning records in front of people?
It's pretty incredible. I think, you know, there are a lot of religions out there, mm-hmm. and then there's a lot of genres of music out there, and we could all sort of look at that the same way.
Oh, that's cool.
I once saw a diagram sort of showing, if you sort of look at a base of a mountain, and if you sort of start taking religions, and we're not going to try to go too crazy today, but if you take a lot of like the base beliefs, core beliefs of religions, you can kind of see them as being like the base of a mountain. Mm. And then as you get higher up in the echelon and the theology and all of that stuff, then things sort of take you to a different peaks.
Yeah.
So they start out with this great thing, but then they sort of take you to different spots.
Yeah, that's funny. I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
Well, it's the same with music.
Yeah.
There's obviously, you know, there's only so many chords. There's only so many notes, but people have been able to take those notes in so many different directions. I was having a conversation with my kids the other day, and sort of started to talk about new music, and I have an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old, which is scary to me to think that they're that old. I'm not that old, I don't think. But we were talking about how they were commenting that new music just, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing good out there. And
You've spoiled them, my friend. To be fair.
My oldest, when he was like one or two, always wanted to hear the Ramones, would go to family functions and sing Johnny Cash. And I felt like it did right.
Yeah, for sure.
Him when he was younger.
Yeah, you can sew your music patch on your son's like Cub Scout patch, like sash.
Yeah, most of the time they don't enjoy my music. Dad wants to listen to records instead of watch TV. But I was talking...
the magic of headphones.
Yes, the magic of headphones. But I was saying, you know, yeah, I don't necessarily enjoy the music that's coming out, but there are so many people that are being so creative with the music and what's going on out here. And I applaud the people who are taking samplers and breaking things down to... Yeah. You know, bits and pieces and reworking them to the people that are in developing countries that don't have money for proper musical instruments, but can build these amazing things out of
nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And they sound amazing. You watch those videos, and every once in a while, I'll go down a rabbit trail on YouTube watching videos of kids in Africa playing these trash instruments. It's like the instruments that they had on Bill Cosby's Fat Albert, Gang. And those guys are like, you know, the washtub bass and all of that stuff. But it's real. The creativity of humans and the ability to sort of make music. Dude, and
one string, man.
Yeah.
Like
that's what drives me, is watching people do that kind of thing and just build. It's there. Humans are amazing creatures.
Totally.
And we can do amazing things, and then we can also do really terrible things.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to go back and... Sorry, I am sometimes a very round-the-way storyteller, and I get lost in my thoughts. You mentioned earlier talking about stuff and how, you know, how we go on. And hope is so important, because if you're hopeless, if you get up in the morning and you're just like, this day is going to suck, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
If you have hope that something good can come out of the day, it can typically happen.
Yeah.
It may not be the whole day. It may not be even like most of the day, but there are hopeful spots where you're like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's what music is sometimes for me, and food too. When you get to share those moments with people, like, this is just cool.
Yeah.
Getting to talk and kind of have those conversations and know
I thought about that. So, when it comes to hope, I read this piece by this woman, Pema Chodron, who wrote this book, When Things Fall Apart. And, I'm going through a separation with my wife, and I think that, like, as your world crushes around you, you don't need a divorce or a tragedy to feel the crushing weight of reality on a regular basis. And there's this interesting perspective, which I don't know if I completely subscribe to. I'm not a person who... I don't subscribe easily to one thing. I think I'm really about like trying to figure out how I fit into everything. I haven't ruled out, you know, the part that Judaism plays in my life. I haven't ruled out what the part that, you know, Eastern philosophy plays in my life, or, you know, any more Christian philosophy. You know, to me, there's value in all of it. But she mentions this part about abandoning hope. And I you can read Dante, and you can think about, you know, going into these places as hope is the thing that keeps it alive. But I kind of like this thought about abandoning hope in an effort to be present in the moment and say, like, hope is something that is a is. If I'm using hope to be like, I wonder what's, I hope the end of today, I feel good about today. Well, if I'm using hope to get there alone, it's gonna be a challenge, right? Like I still have to do the work in each moment that I'm confronted with positivity and humility and like, and to be a part of that stuff. But if I wake up and I don't use, I hope the end of the day is going to be good. I like to say, like, I hope I have the strength to be positive in each moment that I'm confronted with, where positivity is not on the menu. You know, like, I certainly can't. And also just to be able to sort of like freestyle in that, like, I don't know what's coming down the pike today, and I can't worry about it. I can't worry about, you know, whether or not my employees decide to show up, whether or not my deliveries show up, whether or not, I don't know, I get in a car accident, something happens, some tragedy happens. But if I'm not, if I'm not using hope as the catalyst to get me through it, I find that like I can stay a little bit more present. And that's a tool for me because I'm easily distracted. Like I am the barracuda, man. Like you put something shiny in the water and I'm like attacking it. You know, my ex, she called me like, she used to call me a BSO, which is like bright, shiny object. Like I would just like, I would like see something and then just go after it, which is good. Like obviously it's, you know, we started this thing at 5 a.m. trying to get ourselves set up and it's a Saturday and it's a, you know, it's a work week for both of us and we're doing this podcast, but I don't know, man, I got a ton of energy and I want to talk about these things because I feel like if you and I, who, I mean, you say that we may have completely different, you know, philosophies or political positions, but like, do we really? I mean, we're just talking about how our taxes are spent. I would say fundamentally may make the difference, but we still care about our families. We still care about our communities and we still care about like other people and sharing it. I mean, it should be noted for Racks and Stacks that you did not ask for payment at all. That wasn't part of what you wanted to do and you want to do it. You like to spin for people. This is a huge part of what you do. And quite frankly, I don't like experiencing or hosting art that I don't pay for because I know what it is. I know what it is to have something and not be able to know that it doesn't generate any real revenue, but that it makes you happy. And it's the least that I can do. It's just a token, but I think like it should be noted that you and Matt did this out of not just the goodness of your heart, but out of your love for it, which is why it's so awesome to see it, to be in the presence of you spinning, the two of you guys. It's one of the great things of my life. I mean, that memory, September 1st, 2019?
Yes.
Was our 1 year anniversary.
Oh, man.
And we had breakdancers and roller skaters, and it was like you guys were there from 4 until 11.
It was later than that.
It was awesome.
Yes.
It was amazing, man. Yeah.
I have been involved in several DJ events and in public events that have lasting impressions on my life, and that day was seriously, if you haven't ever experienced B-boys, people breakdancing, real life, not just watching it on TV or YouTube, but actually handstands and windmills on
cardboard.
On cardboard. Not linoleum. That's full on
board.
It was like a refrigerator box or something.
Fridge boxes and cardboard that was taped together on pavement and also record spinning for the breaks. Like, man, that was the part for me that was so special, was that, like, you know, like I said, you say that we may have different opinions, but as far as I'm concerned, we're, like, there's no difference between the two of us in that if we can see that and recognize it's awesome, I don't really care about the other stuff.
Right.
You know, like, you have one feeling about politics, I have another feeling. As long as we both agree that is awesome, that's enough for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like that's important to build. And I think that that's kind of what we wanted this whole podcast to be about, was like, we're not that far apart, mm-hmm. all of us. And ultimately, like, when we talk about food, we talk about music. I mean, they're all really powerful. And certainly when you can be in the presence of it. I mean, the Harlem Gospel Choir had come to my high school. And I went to an Episcopal prep school in Connecticut. And I went to church 4 times a week. I sat through communion. I didn't take communion. But I sat through it. And I think that when I called my father the first time, we're both going all over the place with this conversation, but
it's okay.
I remember calling my dad and being like, I'm one of two Jews in the school and I'm going to church. And he's like, it's all the same. He's like, when they say Jesus, they just mean God. Like when they say, you know, like the Holy Blood, just it's the blessings over the bread and the wine, man. He didn't say man.
Man, what's up?
It'd been really cool if my dad.
Hey, Aaron, how is it going?
No, man, my dad was, he was cool, but he was like, he would not use the terminology man.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love calling people man. Hey, man, what's up?
And, you know, it's like you grow up when you're in the presence of like people who are moved. I mean, do I really believe with the same ferocity that maybe some of the people in that Harlem Gospel Choir believe in their faith? No. But can I acknowledge it? Is it clear? Yeah, it's clear. And I can see it and I can feel it. And like you cry,
mm-hmm.
like you cry, you know, like I was just, what's the, Oh, Happy Day. Like you hear that and you hear 25 people singing that song and it's moving. You can't deny it.
I'm getting tingles.
Yeah, you can't. And like this is in a small chapel a small New England chapel that's maybe 1,500,000 square feet, you know, 2,000 square feet, like a small space, big ceilings, but like not a lot of, I mean, the whole entire school only has 200 boys in it. So maybe there were 300 people in that room, you know, and like every square centimeter of space was filled with music and like love. And it's hard, like weird, preppy kids, teenagers, you know, in the presence of that, it's maybe they forget about it. Maybe it doesn't have the same significance, but like for me and my guys who are in my band, like we were like, eyes agape, you know, like, and just voices. No, like there are moments that they had a piano accompaniment or they had like drum and guitar and piano, but like just piano. Oh my God. Like,
yes,
you see it. And so I guess the whole point of that story was to say like, when I see you spinning or, I mean, not, I can see it on you. I can see the look on your face, which is like bliss, like absolute bliss. Like this is my happy place. This is what I'm here. And if that's spiritual for you, it doesn't matter to me because I can see that you're happy. I don't really care what you believe in. I really don't care. I just hope that your beliefs don't seek to cause other people harm.
Right.
In any particular way. But truthfully, like, other than that, I don't care, you know? And I think that's because I love music so much and because my brain can't handle the fact that humans have been making and recording music and writing music for, let's just easily say, a thousand years. Let's just say like in terms of like basic modern times, right? 1,000 years humans have been making musical presentations with the same notes, right? That we currently have identified as like a C and a, like, you know, the scale.
Yeah.
Right. That this is me talking right out of my butt. Like I'm not, I have no knowledge of this, but I'm just throwing like ballpark figures out here, like call it 2,000 years. I don't know. But the point is that, like, there's so much music out there. So many people are fundamentally trying to express themselves. And there's so many records out there. And, like, the stuff that people have recorded, not all of it's good. But they were still like, I'm working on this song. Like, we're gonna do it. And, like, at whatever form it ends up on the wax, man. It is, like, there's real thought and production behind it, man. That blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's, and food is right there with it. And so I kind of feel like you and I have, like, it's great that we have different opinions. It's great that we have, so we come from different parts of, you know, different walks of life, because this podcast is exactly about the fact that, like, hey man, good music, good food. Do I really care about anything else?
Let's sit down at the table and just enjoy.
Yeah.
Period.
Because I'm sure that we can find stuff that we have in common.
Yeah.
You know, and I personally, like, I don't like my mom is really conservative. And doesn't mean I don't love my mother. I love my mother. But at a certain point, she stopped listening to all the talk radio stuff because it was just, for her, it felt like the message was more about pain or anger or fear. I just feel like, man, when this whole election started to come together, people were gearing up for the 2020 presidential election. I didn't cry when Trump got elected. You know, like, I thought, okay, you know, yeah, I studied his failure in business school, but let's just see what happens. And you know what? Like, there's a lot of, we don't have to go into this, but I just wanted to say, like, I guess my whole point was that I think that this podcast and even just two people talking about the things that they love is so much more powerful than two people talking about why they don't believe the other person's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I feel like that's a Christian belief. That's a trope of food, of music. Like, you don't have to be a Rastafarian to appreciate good reggae.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be Christian to appreciate, like, a good gospel song, you know?
Yep.
And you certainly don't need to be a chef to appreciate delicious food. You know, like, I feel like that's the great thing about it, is that no experience required.
Yeah, just put it in your mouth.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a good name for a podcast, and then you just were like, yep, put it in your mouth, and that's even better.
Maybe that'll be it, I don't know. Just put it in there, I don't know. That's, yeah,
we'll see if ear mouth is taken.
This has been really great.
Yeah, man.
This is everything that I hoped it was going to be and more.
Good. Well, I like to talk.
Yes. And the next time, I promise we'll talk more about you and less about myself.
No, I want to talk more about you. I think the thing that's so fascinating about you is that there's a gap. There's a piece of your life I want to know more about. I want to know more about your hardcore time, and I want to know more about, like, where this arc has taken you to, you know, from upstate New York, like, not upstate New York, from northern New York to, you know, to this record obsessed, incredible father of two, husband to an incredible, you know, like, incredibly generous woman, and, you know, like, business owner, or, you know, like really talented, you know, a glazer and an incredible part of this community and generous individual. Like, what is that arc, man? Like, I want to know about that process, because I think it's interesting to look back, not in a sense of pride, but just in a sense of, like, man, of all the choices that I made to get me here, I think it's incredible. And it's why I love living in this community, is because I'm constantly impressed with how we all ended up here.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many great stories, so many great journeys that people have found themselves. When I moved here, people were like, why would you move there? That's the armpit of Massachusetts. Well, I moved from the armpit of New York to the armpit of Massachusetts. So
yeah, it's warm there, man.
Yeah.
I like the armpit. It's comfortable in there. Yeah.
sometimes there's a lot of snow and sometimes, you know, whatever. But yeah. I think I'm just going to end it with my, the famous quote from Muppets Take Manhattan, where Pete is talking to Kermit and, I think Rolf was there too. And Pete goes, you know, peoples is peoples. And that has resonated so much in with me, because no matter where you go, and I have actually been all over the world and seen a lot of amazing places that I've heard people call them dumps and you know, whatever, but people are amazing. People are really, like, you can stand there and look at Mount Everest and that's amazing. But you can find amazing people that live in the shadow of that, or live in slums in Africa or wherever. But people are amazing. And I think that's what we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Our condition, our common ground, just the things that can make us all a little more human, a little more real.
Yeah. I think and keep it closer together. I love that thought of, you know, if an alien comes to our planet and realizes that we're all one species, we're all on this planet together, man. We're all the same. I mean, I'm fading off a little bit here, but yeah, I mean, it's what I love about this idea, about this conversation. And this is my favorite thing to talk about.
Yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Thank you. So we are right about the hour. This is
what?
Yeah, we've talked for an hour.
Oh my gosh,
we could talk forever.
Yeah, that's great. Let's keep doing it.
Let's just keep doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's do this again. I hope that if you're listening, not that anybody is, but I hope if you've heard this and kind of enjoyed the glimpse behind the curtain for my man Aaron and myself, that you would be willing to kind of look behind the curtain to yourself and the people next door and people sitting across from you at work or, you know, whatever. Let's get back together. Let's start treating people nice again. Yeah. Period.
Yeah.
No matter what.
That's right. No matter what.
No matter what. So I'm going to play the music now and we're going to sign off.
All right, man.
But Aaron, you're awesome. Thank you for having the conversation with me. And
thanks, Gabe. I'm thrilled, dude.
Let's do this.
Yeah, we're going to keep it going, man.
Still figuring this all out.
Needle.